Awesome. Welcome, everybody, to The Truth About Dyslexia. In today's episode, I am very lucky to have Matt Bird, who I, you know, thankfully I've got a podcast interviewee with a name I can pronounce. I usually seem to pick people I can't pronounce the name of. He's from Publish You. He is a dyslexic, like many of us, I believe, and he helps amazing, amazing people to write books. And we're going to learn a little bit about his journey today and how he's got to where he is and what he does to help people. Hopefully he's got some cracking tips, because I know all of you want to write a book, but it probably scares the death out of you. So welcome, Matt.
Hey, it's great to be with you, Stephen. And, you know, just to be clear, you know, I do help amazing people write books, but I believe everybody is amazing. So everybody listening, just want to say right up front, you're amazing. Your story matters. You've got a story to tell, and you are amazing.
Mate, that's awesome. And I 100% agree. So let's start this off. I'd love to hear a bit more about your journey with dyslexia and how it's all come about, where you are today.
Yeah, well, I didn't discover I was dyslexic till my late 20s. At school, I really struggled. And when I discovered I was dyslexic, suddenly it made sense. That's one of the reasons why I struggled so much at school. I remember, you know, my teachers putting me in remedial English classes. I mean, the very name itself is a bit of a kind of, yeah, it's just negative, isn't it?
If you were like myself, did you just get to watch movies, or did they put videos on or anything like that, or didn't really happen?
I don't remember a thing, to be honest, Stephen. it was just awful, you know. So, and I remember I was really interested in computing, and I wanted to select computer studies as a module when it came to my options at school. And they said to me, no, you can't do computer studies because your grasp of the English language isn't good enough. I left school believing I was stupid, because that's what most of my teachers told me. I must actually do a shout out for one teacher. He was my English teacher, but he was French. I get that. Mr. Alul, as he's called, you know, he really encouraged me. I don't know quite how he did it, but he said, hey, Matt, look, that essay, let me give you some feedback. And if you want to rewrite it a bit and resubmit it, I'll give you the better grade. So I don't know if I should be naming him, but that's what he did. But do you know what? That really encouraged me, really helped me. And when I wrote my first book, I wanted to send him a copy, because I just thought, wow, that guy was the one teacher at school that believed in me and encouraged me and helped me. He no longer worked at the school, so I contacted our Department for Education, spoke to their pensions department, and they said, look, we can't give you his address, but if you send your letter and book to us, we will forward it on to him. So wow. 6 months later, I heard from him, and he was, of course, delighted. So, but I struggled at school, but Mr. Alul was kind of a light in the darkness.
That sounds, that is such a good story. And I think, you know, those are the game-changing moments. And I think, you know, for many dyslexics out there, we really grab onto those moments, and they're the things we remember. You know, we just kind of remember the rest as a horrible blur, you know, There's really good moments that kept us going.
Yeah. Totally. I'm totally with you. When I discovered I was dyslexic, it kind of, that's why I struggle with languages. I mean, I don't know if they ever did this at school with you, Stephen, but dictation. The teacher would read some stuff out, And you were meant to write it down as they read it out. Boy, I got lost before the end of the first sentence. And 10 minutes later, you know, everybody had written out this dictation exercise, and I didn't have one sentence strung together on paper. It was humiliating.
Oh, I feel you. Like, one of my biggest dyslexic challenges, copying from the board, you know, when the teacher would write it up and you'd have to follow along and copy it, you may as well have just handed me a headache, because it wasn't going to happen like they promised, right?
No, totally not at all. So that's the beginning of my story.
Yeah, man, how old were you? You're in your late 20s, did you say you got diagnosed?
Late 20s, yeah.
And you're now 31.
Absolutely.
It's been a hard life, Matt. We've got there.
Yeah, no, I identify as 31, totally.
Yeah, me too. I think that's the best way to be. I love it. And so, when you found out, so how long ago was 29? Was that has it been about how many years have you known you've been dyslexic? How long has it?
20 years.
Wow, and that's like so. Yeah, that would be in the 2000s. So it's
just pre-2000s, early 2000s. Yeah, yeah.
Wow, it's amazing when you really work it out, right? Like I know I was when I got first diagnosed at 10, and then I worked it out at 31 a bit more about what dyslexia was. But it was, you know, when you really click into the whole story behind it, you know, did that kind of shape your, you know, how did it affect your work life after school?
Well, it just affected my self-esteem fundamentally. I lacked confidence. I just wasn't confident around learning environments or people, in fact. And I would say that, you know, I came to terms with it. I decided that I liked myself, regardless of what my teachers gave me the impression of. And, you know, I finally got over that thing, you know, I'm stupid, I lived with for years. And whenever anything didn't work or I felt I wasn't doing well in life, I'd tell myself it was because I was stupid. And that is just so negative. I've got a daughter who's dyslexic. And I just say to her, look, she's starting exams today, actually. I just say, look, just do your best. It doesn't really matter because when you leave school, you'll start your own business and it'll all be fine. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Once you've got going, nobody's interested at what grades you got at school. But at the time, they make it seem like the future of your life depends upon the grades you're going to get in school. And it's a load of, I don't know if I'm using rude words on your podcast.
Hey, I definitely, I'm always, yeah, I don't know. I sometimes swear, but it's kind of, you know, the grand scheme of it is I'm 100% with you. Like at the time you feel like it is the world ending, but in the grand scheme of it, it means nothing. But it's, you know, and I see that we've got a 6.5-year-old running around and she's just learning so much, you know, her brain is going at 100 miles an hour every minute of every day. And you've got to kind of let them get through those challenging points sometimes, right? Just with the right enforcement, you know. How have you found your daughter growing up with it now versus when you grew up and didn't know? Is it different?
Yeah, I mean, for her, she was diagnosed early, so we got her extra help and extra support. You know, we've done a lot to build her self-esteem, you know, but those are things that we struggle with, aren't they? So, you know, I, Stephen, to be honest with you, you know, I wrestled with it and got over that I'm stupid thing. You know, it took me years to get over it. But I would say it's only probably in the last few years that I've decided in my mind that actually dyslexia is not a disadvantage.
That's good.
Dyslexia is my advantage. And the problem is the language we use to talk about dyslexia. I mean, dyslexia is talked about as a learning disability. I'm sorry, we are not disabled.
No.
It's also described as a learning disorder, you know, or a learning difficulty. And that's a load of rubbish as well. We don't have a problem learning. We can be super fast learners. We just don't learn in that way. We learn in other ways. And because we think with pictures, and they tell us that actually thinking with pictures, you know, images and thinking with pictures is thousands of times faster than thinking with words. Mm-hmm. So actually, we can learn faster and think faster and problem solve better than people who are not dyslexic.
Yeah.
So. You know, so instead of thinking about dyslexia as a disability or a difficulty, I simply say it's a difference. It's a learning difference. We think and process differently. And actually, that's not just a difference, but it's actually a superpower. It gives us an advantage in certain ways. And so, you know, in my mind, which is the most important thing, isn't it? I've decided that my dyslexia is my superpower.
I love that. And I think that's, you know, I say that's something similar. I say we were born with, you know, 6-speed Ferraris, in our brains. The average person has an automatic Corolla, and at school they teach you how to drive an automatic Corolla. So we've got all the kit, but it's very hard to learn to drive stick shift or a manual when you're being taught how to drive an automatic. You know, our brains are brilliant. And it's like, one of the things that interested me when, you know, around this interview is that I'm a freaking good writer. You know, I'm a really good writer. I love writing. And, you know, I'm probably jumping ahead in the story here because I'm so interested to talk about what you do on a daily basis. But, you know, it is amazing. You know, like I can write 1,000 words when I'm in the mood. Because I was very lucky at school with touch typing. I learned how to touch type at a young age. Wow. So I could actually get my thoughts out of my head as fast as they would come. Whereas when I'm writing, there's no chance in, you know, hell, there you go, there's the word, you know, no chance in hell of it happening, right? So, like, do you find that as well, working with, you know, creatives and writing books and stuff?
Yeah, I think because we think with pictures, we can think faster.
Mm.
So, you know, I mean, as a dyslexic, the fact I've written a book is, yeah, you might think is crazy, but I've authored 20 books now. Mm. I've learned a way of planning and then writing and then editing and publishing books that's my way. It's a unique way of doing it. And I coach over 100 people a year to write their books by my unique step-by-step methodology. And it works. I mean, 8 out of 10 of my students finish my 100-day program with a book manuscript. 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
It works. It's so, I mean, I've got a book in my head this morning. I mean, I came up with the idea yesterday, and it's in my head this morning, and I'm going to map it all out and storyboard it all out today. And that's the hardest thing about writing a book. It's the initial idea and then structuring it all out. And all I need to do then is write it. It's easy.
Exactly. And then this is where I think there's a real common issue where people think, I've got dyslexia, I can't write a book. And I remember interviewing a guy called Dr. Halliwell. He wrote ADHD 2.0, really good, really, like probably the top ADHD doctor, I'd say, in the world, you know, probably the most well-known and best book on ADHD I've ever listened to, should we say. But he was saying, like, he's dyslexic. And he goes, I love writing books because it's a little bit out of my comfort zone, but it's enjoyable. And again, like, he'd found a system like you're talking about. And I think this is the challenge with so many dyslexics. It's, we can do everything. We just operate differently. And you've got to find a system that actually works for the way our brains work, right?
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. So my system works.
Yeah. And so what drove you? What drove you to write your first book? Where did you, like, I know I jumped forward. Hey, this is a dyslexia podcast. We can jump into the future. We can go backwards. You know, there's no order here. There's no structure. So let's go back to your first book. How did it come about?
I remember I sat with a friend having a coffee, and I was talking about a series of speeches I was going to give at a conference. And he's just said to me, Matt, he said, that is a book. And I was like, I'd never, ever thought about writing a book. Never crossed my mind until that moment. And he was deadly serious. And he picked up his phone and he dialed a number, said, hey, I've got a young man here in front of me. He's got a book in him. Will you publish it? He'd found his publisher. And he passed me the telephone. I nearly wet myself.
My gosh.
So, that's how I came to, I mean, I met the publisher and talked about my idea. We shaped it up together. I found a way of writing it. And that's how I published my first book. Wow. And then you get the bug, you see. Once you've done something once,
yeah,
your mindset shifts and you think, I can do this. Somebody finished my course recently and they said, I never thought I would write a book, let alone in 100 days. But I have. Now I'm asking myself, what else have I told myself I cannot do, but I actually can? Because it's a game changer.
Yeah.
If you could do one thing you think you couldn't do, what else could you do?
I'm with you, mate. It's all about belief, right? I'm so with you. And I think for anyone out there who's listening, you know, the thought of writing a 10-page essay would scare a lot of you. But, you know, it is about doing it the dyslexic way. And I think, you know, it's such a common story. You know, dyslexic person has one good break and it works. Dyslexic person reverse engineers the system and improves it. And then, then passes it on. I swear it's so common, but it's great. And it's like, you know, us all helping each other in different ways is amazing. And so, and you know, you must have you had many dyslexics go through the course? I guess people don't put their hand up and say, I've got dyslexia too often.
Yeah. No, I don't ask them to identify them. But there are people. I mean, because I'm an advocate for understanding, celebrating, and maximizing the gift of dyslexia, you know, dyslexic people do, you know, hear me talk about writing books and think, I'm going to do it. I mean, you're probably listening now and you're thinking, do you know what? I always thought that's one thing I couldn't do because I'm dyslexic. If that's what you're thinking right now, I just want to say it's nonsense. Everybody has a book in them. Everybody has a story to tell. And if I can do it, you can do it. My goodness me. And it is about self-belief. Another lovely little story, Stephen, is one of my authors in South Africa, because I coach people around the world who I coach to write and then publish. One day she sent me a little WhatsApp message and it was a video. And she said, my son asked me to record this and send it to the publisher, by which he meant me. And he's like 9 years old. And he had written a little book with pictures on paper, stapled it together. And then he sat on the chair and he read the book and asked his mum to video it and send me.
Wow. That must have got
now, it's a lovely little story, but actually it's very profound. Because every person that I help write and publish their book, it means that the children that grow up in their home believe writing and publishing a book is what? Normal.
Mm.
There are children, I mean, we're publishing now a book a week for people that have done my course. Every week we're publishing an author that's done my course. And, in each of their homes, often they have children, naturally. And those children are now growing up thinking, oh, it's normal to write and publish a book because my mum has done it or my dad has done it. And that itself is a mindset shift and creates a level of belief in the lives of those children. And that's part of my vision for Publish You. Yeah, I want to get people, enable people to tell their story, communicate their message. But actually, it creates a huge legacy factor in terms of the children that are impacted by their parents writing a book.
Actually saying that, my mother has written a book and she's as dyslexic as they come, and she struggled. It was hard. You know, she wrote a book, I think it was called Catching the Knowledge Wave. It was all about, you know, the struggles with IT. And, you know, the thing she was always most proud of, one was the book, but it was also, she took a photo sitting at an office desk in the water at one of the beaches over here. And it wasn't Photoshopped. It was a real photo at a beach. And I must say, like, watching her do that, you know, it gives me, you know, it doesn't seem crazy to write a book because I've seen it done by someone who I'd never have thought would have done it. And you're right. Like it's about passing that down. And like, so here's a question, you know, you've got a young one. Is she planning her book or is she going to be writing her first book? Or have you talked around you?
I have mentioned it to her a couple of times, but I'm letting her focus on her exams at the moment.
As a father, she'll never listen to you in that respect. You know that. The minute you say, don't write a book, she'll be like, I'm writing a book, Dad.
yeah, absolutely. I'm going to tell her the opposite.
Exactly. She'll never write a book. I don't think you've got one in you. Oh, boom, she'll have one published within the next month. It's
She's amazing.
And like, you know, around your course, so if you were going to give, you know, the listeners here who are thinking, Maybe they've got a story. And I would say many people will have stories that are dyslexic, and they'll be thinking about it. And, you know, some of them may even have got 10% of the way to writing some notes on a Google Doc, including myself. What are a few tips you would give people that think they've got a book, but just the idea of where to start scares the Jesus out of them?
Yeah. Well, I'd love to actually, I can give a tip, but I'd actually like to gift you something. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I think I'd like to write a book, but what do I write about? What's my book idea? Well, I've written a little ebook called My Book Idea. And I would love to gift anybody listening a copy. It's there for you. It'll just help you work through a few questions and give you a bit of input around developing ideas you have for books. And I say everybody's got a book in them. You know, some of us have got libraries, you know, so there are lots of ideas. But what is going to be your first idea for a book? Anyway, so you can get this free gift. If you go to the website, www.publishtheletteru.com. And here's the secret bit. So publishu.com, do /free. There we go. publishu.com/free.
I'll pop it in the show notes as well. So I'll make sure it's nice and easy, guys. You'll be able to find it, click the link and head through. And, you know, in that book, again, is probably one of the, you know, if you think about the picking your idea, I guess most people will have a bunch of ideas. Is there something that, you know, do you find it takes a bit of refining of what people want, or is it more important about what the person wants to write about? Or is it more of the angle? You know, is there?
Great question. So I always encourage people, the first book you write, and people laugh at that, but the first book you write, write it about the thing that you are most passionate about. Because you're going to need all that energy, that positivity, and that vibe to help you get through and write this thing. And it's also your first book is what you become known for. Yes. So it's really important for your personal brand and your personal reputation. Write about the thing you're most passionate about and want to be known for being passionate about. That's my first tip.
That's huge. And I 100% agree, because, you know, like anyone like us, you know, we can easily get lost in the journey, right? You have a great idea one day and you're on to the next thing the next day. So it better be something you love, you know, you're interested in, and that, you know, you do want on your CV, right? You know, if you wouldn't write about the book somewhere close to you, you know, it's important, hey?
Totally. And then the course, we will help people refine their idea. You know, refine, who is this book for? Who am I writing this book for?
Yes.
It'll help refine what is the core message of this book. I mean, I'm talking about nonfiction books here. And also, how is it going to help people? Why would somebody want to buy this book? So we help refine people's initial idea. But my main thing is write about what you're passionate about.
Yes. And I think it's also important, though, the what's in it for me vibe. You know, let's be honest, too many of us, you know, I find this really with dyslexia a lot, is we can be very broad and then very narrow in the way we see the world. And the fact is, we can see it from our perspective so tightly, we sometimes forget the external perspective. And I think it is important to think when you are writing a book, you know, tell me if I'm right or wrong here, I know it's the same in marketing, is that it's all about what's in it for the person reading. What's the problem this book is aiming to solve? You know, would you agree?
Absolutely. We are all so full of information. We have access to so much information. If you just invest time, buying a book is cheap, but reading a book, that is time. That is expensive. We really need to be sure why we're writing the book and what is in it for the reader.
Yes. Are you, here's a question. Are you finding many people are recording an audiobook version these days? Is that happening more and more?
There's a lot of talk about audiobooks, but it's probably only 5% of the book market. It's a little bit like ebooks. You know, when they first came out, they're going to overtake paperbacks. They're going to overtake paperbacks. Actually, they never did. But what they did do was increase the market, the size of the market. Yeah. So more people ended up buying and reading books because of ebooks. And it's the same with Audible. Actually, the size of the book reading or listening market has grown as a result of audiobooks.
That's interesting.
And it's about 5% of the market currently.
Wow, that's a really good stat. I must say, like, I've been looking a bit at AI, and there's a audio reader called 11 Labs that's just come out, if you're ever interested. And basically, it's created this voice. It's a British voice. We just recorded one for an explainer video we did. You cannot tell it is not a human reading the text.
And wow.
It's a game changer for audiobooks. Like, you imagine, you know, you can literally, like, we plugged a 800 word script in it. It even laughed when it was supposed to laugh. It was so creepy that you can just, it's amazing. And like, for someone who, I'm definitely an audiobook absorber naturally. Mm-hmm. Like, my Audible account, you know, it's had its money spent on it. But when you can get robots that sound like humans, that sound better than half the Audible presenters, you know, it'd be interesting to see how that helps dyslexics as well.
Totally. You know, and I've got 20 books, and I'd like to do audio versions, but that's a lot of investment of time to read 20 books in a studio. So I'd like to know more about that, because
I'll share with you. Yeah, 11 Labs. I'll show you after this, but it's amazing what's possible. And I think for everyone out there listening around books, you know, if you've got something inside you, especially if you're an entrepreneur, you're self-employed, you know, using them as a calling card, that was what my mum did. And like, she got known for it. She got speaking engagements from it. She gave it out. She was doing it all, like, everywhere. And it was, you know, kept her business going for a period of time. And it was very valuable. And do you see that a lot with your authors?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I say to people, you know, you can make a bit of money from selling books. I mean, let me put it this way. A fraction of 1% of people make a living from writing books. For most of us, you know, we buy an extra holiday a year. That's the way I tend to think about it.
Yeah.
But that's from book sales. But there is also what business you win as a result of being an author, which is different to book sales.
Yes.
So you get invited to speak at an event or write for a newspaper or whatever it might be, or you engage coaching clients, or, you know, there are things that happen as a result of being a published author, because you're perceived as being a subject matter expert. Your gravitas increases, your authority increases the moment you become a published author on a subject, assuming the book's half good, which it will be. So this does attract opportunities, fiscal opportunities, consulting contracts, coaching relationships, speaking engagements, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, I think for dyslexics, entrepreneurship is so large, and there's such a, you know, if you're working for someone at the moment, you know, it's so, you know, it's like, I love being an entrepreneur. I always say I'm unemployable. You know, now that I've worked for myself, I'd be horrendous.
Me too.
I'd be horrible. God, I'd fire myself so quickly. But like, I love working for myself. Even the hard times, it's still great. And you know, with books like that, you know, it's just a way to share your vision. And I think, you know, the one thing I do see when I talk to dyslexics is we do have a challenge with self-esteem. And there'll probably be people out there going, you know, whether you do Matt's course or not, or whatever you're thinking, what's going through your head, is the story you're telling is a flavor of information. Let's be honest, 99.9% of information is out there in different formats. People buy your flavor. You know, the reason you're listening to this podcast is you like the way I think or the way I speak about dyslexia and how, you know, you can help. And so a book is the same way. It's a flavor of information that people will absorb better because it's come from your perspective. Is that kind of the way you see it, Matt? Is that kind of your...
Yeah, totally. And, you know, you might be listening to this and thinking, well, what could I write that's not already been written? I'm sure you're asking that question. Or who's going to buy it anyway? Mm-hmm. Well, let me just say to you, firstly, that you have a unique voice because of your family, your education, the context in which you grew up, the career you've followed to date, the relationships you've had. This gives you a unique perspective on a subject that may have been written about 1,000 times before. Your voice is truly unique and your perspectives are truly unique. And secondly, well, who's going to buy it anyway? Well, that's a great question, because you have a group of people you went to school with, college with, uni with. You've got family, you've got people from the sports club, you've got people from your neighborhood. You've got every person has an ecosystem of relationships. And whether those people are readers or not, they will want to buy your book because you've written it. They might buy no other book on the subject you write about, but they'll buy your book because they know you and they don't know many people who have written a book. So you also have a unique community of people who will buy and read your book that's unique to you. So that's the way that I think about it, and that's what people discover.
Yeah, and I think that's really key. You've got those close-knit people. And then if you are in business or an entrepreneur, just from my perspective, you know, people, you know, this day and age, you know, with the digital world, like you're in England, I'm in New Zealand with this conversation, is that small business is different. It's no longer that shop on the corner. You know, it just doesn't exist that way anymore. These small little business hubs could be 1,000 people you've got around you on LinkedIn. You know, that's your small business community in this day and age. And, you know, be it a book or whatever you're creating, you know, that starts to position you. And you know, you only need that small little group of people to join you in your journey. And you're creating a pretty good living. You know, it's, you know, you've probably seen that as well, Matt, just from the people you've chatted to and working with.
Yeah, totally. Totally. It's a great way. I mean, I'm an entrepreneur. I mean, I decided this during the pandemic. I mean, I've always started things, but I always resisted calling myself an entrepreneur because I thought, well, I've never built something huge in my mind, and I've never made a load of money in my mind, you know, and that's often what we perceive an entrepreneur as, multi-gazillionaire, you know, who's done this, da, 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 da. But, you know, I founded a global foundation called Neighbor, and we're working in 16 nations around the world, including New Zealand, Australia, Africa, Americas, Europe. That's entrepreneurial, I think. I started it. I built it. You know, I run a publishing company. You know, we're publishing 50 books a year. I'm coaching over 100 people a year to write their books. That's entrepreneurial. I've bought a holiday property in Italy. Now I'm running it as a holiday rental. I've written a book. A travel guide to the city and the area where my property is. You know, flipping heck, I am entrepreneurial and I've accepted it. And guess what? What you call yourself and the way you speak about yourself really matters. What other people call you and the way other people speak about you matters. And this comes back to mindset again, doesn't it, Stephen?
Yeah.
You know, if you think you're crap, if you think you're rubbish, you're going to struggle. But if you think, actually, my dyslexia is a superpower, it enables me to think fast, think visually, solve problems, create ideas, start a bit. Do you know what I mean? There's lots of amazing things about being dyslexic, which are an advantage rather than disadvantage. So if we, in our minds, we say, my dyslexia is my advantage, not my disadvantage. That alone will change your trajectory because you've changed the way you're changing what you think is possible.
Yeah. And you kind of, what you want to think about, or what I always think about is you imagine, you know, those audio boards where the bass, the treble, all this stuff's happening. All of our brains are one of those boards. Dyslexics just have more in one place and less in another place. That's the difference. So, you know, we've got pluses and minuses. And guys, You know, well, everything you believe, everything you say to yourself, every story, and I hate the word belief, it is such a non-physical word. Think of it as stories. You know, if you can tell yourself a story that you're useless at something, it's true. You can tell yourself a story you're great at something, it's true, because it's all stories. You know, very little of the world is truth. It's, you know the story you tell yourself. However, and it's a lot easier to say this than to do it, but, you know, it's right. Would you agree?
Totally. Henry Ford of motor car fame once said, whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're probably right.
Which is,
and for me, that sums it up perfectly. What do we think is possible? Because if we think it's possible, it is possible. If we think it's impossible, it will be impossible.
Well, I'm so with you, mate. And do you know, if you know, for everyone listening, we'll probably wrap it up now because I know everyone's attention's probably waning. But you know, on that, you know, I know how we're all like, guys.
Your attention is waning. That's it, Stephen.
So everybody, I will be putting all of Matt's links in the podcast notes. So jump in there, click the links, go see what Matt's all about. That free book of his looks really good, helps you get the ideas flowing. Is there any final words? You know, imagine you were talking to the younger version of you or maybe your daughter, what would you tell them about dyslexia? You know, what would you tell yourself?
I would say it is your advantage, not your disadvantage. It is a blessing, not a curse. It is your superpower rather than a disability. Change the way you think. The book I'm going to start writing today, by the way, is called Yes, I Can. And it's a book about overcoming our self-doubts, our self-imposed limitations, our self-esteem challenges. Because what we think is possible is so important. So if you're listening to this, I just want to say to you, you have a book in you. And if I can write mine, you can write yours. I guarantee you.
Oh, awesome, man. Appreciate your time, my friend. And everybody, hope you've enjoyed listening. We'll be back next week.